Svenno, we're currently working on consolidating some of our tools and thinking about our tech stack. And there's really a lot to think about there. Here today, I have a great guest joining us to help answer some of my questions. Joining me is William Liang from Prolytics Consulting Group. William, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Melissa, for having me.
So it seems like there's been an explosion in fintech and software companies. There's a lot out there. How should someone go about starting to think about even where to start when thinking about the tools and the tech stack?
Every organization are in different states. They come in different shapes and sizes. But I think with the Office of Finance in particular, and I hope you can agree, Melissa, would be there's two key traits I would see that they want to strive towards, which is being flexible and accurate. So what I would recommend for finance departments would be to build on the particular areas that exemplifies those two traits. So really build on those back end functions that will be in order for us to supply our organization with that accurate and timely and flexible of data and information they're seeking.
So when you think about this, who would you suggest we should be engaging with within our companies when we start to think about the finance tech stack?
For sure. So when we're looking at the finance tech stack, I think there's a couple of things that we got to focus on. One, obviously, being the people. The second, the process and the technology, right? So where we start, I think getting executive leadership, that initial buy-in, that initial strategy, that roadmap, and working together with the executives to get that, seek that buy-in before we reach the other parts of the organization. So where I would focus on next would be the department managers, the department heads, any strategic leaders in the organization that has a potential impacted by these new systems or processes that companies will look to deploy.
And any other key stakeholders that you think need to be part of that?
The day-to-day end users of the system that's going to be an advocate of the change. It would be really great to get, you know, those frontline individuals also involved in the process so they're aware and they can also contribute back to what the potential impacts on the day-to-day operations as well.
So let's talk a bit about staffing. When you're thinking about making a digital transformation, who should be involved and how should companies think about staffing? Is it a dedicated person? Do you think there's a team? Is it people doing this as part of their job? What do you advise there?
Every organization may be in a different state. The people, the personnel, the resources, there's potential constraints, right? So I would say, look into a blend of both in-house resources, look at those particular individuals that could be advocates of the change. And obviously in gaps where there's areas of, rather it be bandwidth or expertise, looking at external consultants. And of course, being a consultancy ourselves, I'm a little biased here, but all jokes aside, like bringing in that external help and using that as an advantage could become really strategic as well.
And do you often, on that vein, do you see companies being most successful when they build up that in-house part of the expertise? Should it reside within the, say, finance function? Or should some of that be in the IT group and be done more at a consolidated level? What have you seen?
I know there's different strategies that companies that we've worked with look to deploy. They may look for a more decentralized model where, you know, like particular departments own and try to operate their system, which is a great strategy, right? But I feel like IT would be able to kind of set that initial roadmap across all the different systems to make sure that no particular system or process are kind of outliers to the rest. Because I think as part of the transformation across and implementing systems, integration between all of the various systems and processes is so important, right? Because you don't want to build disparate systems. There needs to be an overall somebody to kind of gate and make sure that what we're deploying across the organizations is brought together with synergy.
And on that point, because I think, you know, what you're describing is a almost an overall IT technology roadmap that touches across the entire organization. And maybe you can give your thoughts on at what stage and size of a company does that really start to become a crucial item to help drive this a little more centrally rather than decentralized?
So I feel like it depends on the need and when and what particular areas you struggle with, right? So, you know, as part of this finance transformation, I would ask and challenge to kind of look through what your team's doing day to day, where they're spending the most time and where those tedious tasks are taking up the most time, right? Then from that, we could then look at areas we could potentially improve on as well. So, you know, just for example, on our team here, in the initial, the beginning of the year, we actually went back to the drawing board and we did a full-on SWOT analysis on where our company and our processes and look for areas of improvement. So I think just utilizing something as simple as going back to the drawing board and identifying can really help us figure out where potential opportunities and best utilize our strength. Now, going back to what particular size, it depends. I think we've seen companies when they get to around the 100 to the 200 mark that use of a particular finance systems function, that comes in very handy in order to continue to scale and ensure that that strategy that we talked about is being deployed consistently.
And you're talking numbers of employees there when you say 1 to 200?
Yeah, I would say so. Because that, you know, kind of signifies how many people or stakeholders across the organization that this group is looking to support, and also kind of just goes hand in hand with, you know, the revenue and, you know, what type of the volume of data and transactions that we're dealing with as well.
Now, let's talk a bit about what some of the mistakes are that you see companies make when they think about a digital transformation. Do you have any real world examples of stories maybe you could share about mistakes to avoid?
I think it's all initially, it's about the people before the process and technology. So sometimes we've seen cases where customers may rush into deploying something just because their competitor has it, or, you know, a peer in the industry is trending that way, and they're just trying to keep up, right? So, but like I said, like your organization, the people needs to be ready in order for you to kind of proceed with that, actually deploying and implementing something that works. So we often find, you know, companies may rush into that process just because, you know, their peers or competitors are doing so.
Okay. And then I guess they buy the software and they're really not ready to implement it. That would be why you're suggesting that don't rush it?
Yes, exactly. And then, like I said, I think I would really focus on like back office functions first, right? Like getting that accuracy, earn that trust with the rest of the organization, with the executives, before we try to get into more like fancier type technology that will continue to optimize and improve. But again, getting that initial trust and accuracy, I feel like that's the most important step one.
Now, one of the mistakes I'll admit that maybe I've made in terms of implementing some systems was thinking that the way we did things before would be the new way we need to do it, and probably heading down a bit too much on the path to customizing rather than leaning on the company providing the system to give us their expertise and help us understand what they see as best practice, because they have the benefit of seeing these systems implemented in multiple companies. Is that something you see play out often? And what are your suggestions there on how much to go with more standardization and best practice versus customizing for what you think your business needs?
We should never pigeonhole ourselves or trying to adapt our process for a particular system. That's, again, processes and the technologies should come hand in hand, meaning that, you know, if the system should be able to be flexible enough to support how the business is ran, and the technology should be flexible enough to scale when the business and its processes changes. Because we do see that a lot as we're going through partnerships with our clients that evolve from, you know, growing from 20 to 50 to 100 to, you know, 1,000 to enterprise level. So going to being, you know, having that luxury of seeing organizations scale and seeing how many redeployments or upgrades or migrations and you know, really seeing all those challenges that comes along with it. It would be great, wouldn't it, if they're deploying, you know, with that thought in mind of the technology that's allowed them to scale it with them, rather than having to, you know, go back and redo implementations or migrate out technology that just wouldn't scale with them.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
And you talk about redeployments there, and that's an interesting one. What would you say are some of the common pitfalls companies have fallen into that end up with them having to redeploy?
maybe building things in mind. And again, this is, I don't think it's a knock on anybody or during that initial implementation, because during the time, maybe that was the right software. Those are, you know, maybe the chart of accounts was built a certain way, for example, and it made sense at the time. But as your company grows, new products come in, new lines of business, new partnerships, the way you structure your business may change. And going back and redeploying or updating it, you know, for what works today, it's common, and we see that a lot, right? But again, the technology should be able to be flexible enough to support these changes without disrupting your day-to-day.
And how high do you think the stakes are for making a mistake?
I've seen cases where obviously, you know, mistakes are costly to both the company and to, you know, so I would say it's something that, again, it's case by case. So if obviously don't keep it personal, I feel like, you know, if, for example, you chose a wrong system, going back to what I mentioned at the time, maybe it was the right. But as again, changes evolve, business evolve, now we need to go back and redeploy something new. I think that's, you know, we've seen that happen. And like I said, don't hold it personal. And I feel like it's just obviously also drives an opportunity for us to continuously improve as well.
Yeah, great thoughts there. And I guess from my perspective, my experience has sometimes been too, depending on the numbers of users and how far and wide the system's going to touch within the organization, the stakes get a little bit higher in terms of the course correction versus I think there are some tools where if it's specific to just one part of the organization, one type of user, the stakes get a little less high because you can make changes without impacting so many other parts in the business. So you talked earlier in the beginning about integrations, and that's something I'm really curious about. When users are thinking about the importance of those integrations and how they should go about integrations, what are some pieces of advice you'd give them there?
I think all the systems should be built together in mind that there potentially would be overlaps or exchanging of systems. So having that kind of open architecture between your systems is very important, right? So your CRM, your ERP, your billing system, all of these kind of play together, right? So you need to be in order, be able to pull that data out or merge that together. So we've seen a lot of organizations now move to data warehouses and build ways to kind of model that data together, right? Although it serves as an operationally, they serve its different purpose, but getting that all that data together is super, super crucial, right? So for example, like SaaS companies like yourself, I'm sure, you know, something that's discovering like your ARR, right? You'll need to have your ERP, you need your billing system information, you need, you know, your CRM and really pull that together in order to really look at, you know, your numbers accurately, right?
And so when we think about some of those integrations, because I think you're right, you need to think about setting up the systems with hoping they can integrate with many of your other systems. Are there some critical integrations that you see most commonly? For instance, I think that the CRM system is often integrated with other systems, but some of the key integration points between types of systems that finance people in particular should be thinking about, maybe two or three of the most common integrations you see?
The billing, obviously, is one. The invoicing, another. ARAP. Now, that's why we've seen, obviously, these are separate functions, but most of our tools that we've been deploying in place and what you've seen a lot in the market would be a convergence of all of these different types of operations, right? So meaning that there could be under one specific platform, they offer all these different areas to support AR, AP, payroll, expense management, right? So these are all critical Office of Finance duties, but being under one system, one process, it just simplifies and, you know, going back to really converging all of these things into one to make the processes are more aligned as well.
I think one of the things that's critical is once you've selected a tool is how do you train your employees on how to use these tools so that you can actually get the benefits out of them that you were hoping for? And I think this is particularly challenged now in a remote working environment. Do you have any tips for us on how we should go about training our users?
For all our implementations, our partnerships with our clients, that change management, that enablement, that training is so critical, right? So I think first, internally, I would recommend evaluating the talent within your department, right? How well are their skills matched to what were the expectations are or what we're trying to implement, right? If there's a gap, let's start moving on getting the people trained, right? And, you know, going back to the hybrid model, super important. I think even for us, like, you know, we being in the consultant industry, we're used to this hybrid model of, you know, traveling, working remotely, working together in the office. So we strategically kind of plan when it makes sense to kind of bring us all together, right? Whether it be lunch and learns, whether it be team events, knowledge sharing, postmortems, we do a lot of that together, right? Now, things for that can be done remotely, more effectively, we kind of structure it that way. So we really try to help align our employees to really best utilize their time and place those particular tasks and use the scheduling properly so that they can, you know, optimally deliver what they're planned out to do.
And you make a great point about figuring out what makes sense when. Are there certain types of training that you think are best done, for instance, in person?
Process-related changes that's going to involve the team. I think that's one thing that's really, really good to kind of do it in person. Things like more technical, I've seen, you know, people able to pick up and, you know, remotely in a remote fashion or through online learning and such. But I say anything that impacts the team, anything process-related, anything that needs advocates or drivers of change, those are better suited for like in-person type training and the enablement sessions.
We hear lots of talk about micro training and curious your thoughts on that as an approach. You know, do you do a lot of the training up front or should you space it out and do it in smaller bits as you go? What's most successful?
Breaking it out, it's definitely a great idea. Obviously, you know, if one typically, as you've seen a lot of the trainings that are done remotely, it's hard to keep attention span throughout, you know, the entire day, right? So breaking out the relevant training to the particular time, it's very important, right? So meaning that we don't want to train something and put forward information that's not used until the end of the project or you know, until, you know, 6 months from now. We really want to tailor our training, schedules, our communications to the different phases of the project in order for, you know, things to get retained and absorbed and retained by, you know, the trainees involved.
If you were to think of what you wanted to be the two or three key takeaways for the audience to remember on this topic of thinking of new systems and digital transformation, what would that be?
Process technology comes after the people. So change management first in order for you to decide that when you're ready to take on, you know, new systems or processes.
Excellent. Thanks so much for that. Really appreciate the conversation today. Now, whenever we have a guest on our show, we do like to end with a couple of rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Okay, sure.
All right. The first one, what is the best piece of leadership advice that you've gotten in your career?
That's a good one. I'm going to answer it by a quote that my colleague had shared with us. It's there are no shortcuts to any place worth going.
And the second one is, what is something that you do in your personal life that helps you show up as your best self in your professional life?
Staying organized and being prepared, I think, has been critical in our success here. Secondly, you got to love what you do, right? And find ways to keep yourself motivated. You know, not every day is going to be as exciting as yesterday. So really thinking ahead and defining small goals in order for, you know, myself to stay on top of, you know, my form and stay motivated and be able to continue to improve.
Great advice here. Thanks so much for sharing. If you'd like to learn more about today's episode, please visit the links in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcast because you don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.